The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from National Public Radio and the Religion News Service. First of all, from National Public Radio on May the 9th, an article entitled, "An Arizona Lawmaker Who is also a minister, is under investigation for a Bible prank," by Ben Giles, Phoenix. Amid a small gathering inside the Arizona House members' lounge, State Representative Stephanie Stahl Hamilton isn't exactly subtle. Caught on camera, the Democrat swipes a Bible from an end table and appears to place it under a nearby cushion. In what her own pastor described as an ill-advised prank, Stahl Hamilton, who is a Presbyterian minister herself, had been hiding Bibles from the members' lounge in odd places, like inside a refrigerator. Stahl Hamilton has explained it as a playful commentary on the separation of church and state and a protest against the weaponization of religion in politics. The prank captured the attention of GOP leadership, who, after finding the missing Bibles, decided to install hidden cameras to catch the culprit. Since being caught, not all of Stahl Hamilton's colleagues are laughing. Three even filed a formal ethics complaint against her. "We and other members of the Arizona House who cherish our faith and hold the Bible in reverence do not see Representative Stahl Hamilton's disrespect of Scripture as playful in any regard." Representatives Justin Heap, David Marshall, and Lupe Diaz wrote in their complaint against Stahl Hamilton. In it, the three first-time Republican representatives accuse her of disorderly conduct under House rules, theft, and creating a hostile work environment under state and federal laws protecting workers from religious discrimination. To be clear, a House ethics inquiry can't find anyone criminally liable for anything. It's no court of law. The complaint could amount to nothing. It could also end in a House vote for punishment, as little as a censure, at most expulsion. Republican Representative Joseph Chaplick, who chairs the House Ethics Committee, is taking it seriously. "Something of this magnitude that's made national news, I think it's only wise to allow the person that has the claim held against him to come and speak about it," he said. "Due process. Let them talk and understand what happened, and let's figure out if this is a valid or invalid claim against them." Democrats are quick to point out the prank only made national headlines after GOP House leaders released select footage from their hidden camera sting operation to a local TV station. "This could have been handled with a phone call by the Speaker and the majority," said House Minority Leader Andre Caro. "It also didn't have to be a political gotcha moment." Caro told Arizona PBS he fears the complaint is payback against Stahl Hamilton. She filed an ethics complaint in March that led to the expulsion of a Republican representative for that lawmaker's role in spreading a baseless election conspiracy about other elected lawmakers. "This should not be about political retribution, and I'm worried with what I'm seeing so far," Caro said. Well before the complaint was filed against her, Stahl Hamilton apologized. In a speech delivered on the House floor, she said she had never meant to desecrate the Bible or offend. "I hold Scripture very dear to my heart," she said. "It is what guides me. It is what shapes and informs the decisions I make." "A conversation about the separation of church and state," she said, "would have been better started as an actual conversation, not a stunt like this. I recognize that my actions could have been seen as something less than playful and offensive," Stahl Hamilton continued. "And for those of you who I have deeply offended, I apologize." In her formal written response to the ethics complaint against her, Stahl Hamilton's attorneys wrote that her actions were a peaceful protest in response to the weaponizing of religion in politics. Reverend Katie Sexton Wood doesn't condone Stahl Hamilton's behavior. I don't necessarily agree with putting a Bible in a refrigerator, but she also appreciates the point the representative was trying to make. Sexton Wood heads the Arizona Faith Network, an interfaith organization in Phoenix, and is a pastor in the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ. The Bible is, but shouldn't be, the lone religious document in the members' lounge, she said. I carry my Bible with me to places that I want to have reference to it, she said, but I'm not putting it out in the halls of our Capitol, where it can be seen as a predominant document that is forming and informing laws that are being made. Put another way, it's one thing for individual lawmakers to have Bibles on their desks, but Sexton Wood says she wonders what Bibles are doing in the members' lounge in the first place. We still need to talk about why it was those actions were necessary to begin with in Stahl Hamilton's mind, she said. And that's going to require a conversation around whether that Bible should be in there or not to begin with. Or at least, she said, a conversation about what other sacred texts also deserve a place in the members' lounge. With an ethics inquiry underway, it's not a conversation Representative Andro Caro anticipates having. I have not gotten any reassurance that the Book of Mormon, the Koran, any of the texts that are super important to Arizonans, Americans, people of this world, would be included in our members' lounge, he told Arizona PBS. Now an article from the Religion News Service, published on the 4th of May, entitled, More Americans Pray in Their Car Than in a Place of Worship, Survey Finds, by Adele M. Banks. Despite reports of declining worship attendance and religious affiliation, 6 in 10 Americans say that they pray, a new survey reports. A higher percentage, 85%, say they engage in a spiritual practice to connect with a higher power, whether prayer, meditation, mindfulness, reciting affirmations, or spiritually based yoga. Prayer is the most common of the 5 practices, with 39% of Americans saying they practice meditation and 38% practicing mindfulness. Findings of the survey of more than 1,700 Americans were released by the Radiant Foundation on May 4, which is National Day of Prayer. It showed that U.S. adults who pray often do so at dawn or when they awaken, 50%, or at bedtime, 55%. More people report that they pray in their car, 61%, than in a place of worship, 46%. These results make it clear that there's more praying taking place than people expect. People are praying in a variety of ways and in unexpected places throughout the day, said John Dye, executive director of Skylight, a Radiant Foundation website that offers spiritual content such as prayer, affirmations, and yoga aimed at young adults. They are frequently exploring their spiritual side and using prayer to work through adversity, find meaning, and create connection with a higher power. A distinct majority of those who pray, 87%, said they believe they'd received an answer to a prayer in the last 12 months. The top reasons cited for prayer were for a loved one in crisis, 76%, or when someone else was sick, 71%. Other findings looked at how and with whom people prayed. 8 in 10 reported praying regularly by themselves. Younger respondents, in particular millennials and Gen Zs, were more likely than younger boomers and Gen Xers to report that they prayed regularly with members of their spiritual group or family. Nearly a quarter say they pray routinely around their pets. More than 3/4 of those who pray use at least one spiritually related object when they do. The most popular objects, based on a provided list of 20, were books and other texts used by a quarter of respondents at least a few times a week. Others included burning objects such as candles, 19%, a journal, 18%, a pillow or kneeling pad, 18%, a rosary or prayer beads, 18%, or iconography, 18%. The National Day of Prayer was proclaimed by Congress in 1952 and has been observed on the first Thursday in May since 1988. President Joe Biden issued a proclamation. Christians plan gatherings in churches, plazas, and capitals. And Religions for Peace USA hosted a virtual interfaith prayer gathering. Meanwhile, humanist and other non-theist organizations mark the day as a day of reason during a week of community volunteerism. The survey was commissioned by Skylight and conducted by the Boston area research firm City Square Associates. Skylight was launched in 2020 by the Radiant Foundation, a nonprofit organization associated with The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and partially funded by the Deseret Management Corporation, which manages LDS church-affiliated entities. A total of 1,783 U.S. adults ages 18 to 64 participated in the online survey, which had a margin of error of plus or minus 2 percentage points. Many of the questions on prayer were asked only of the 1,090 Americans who indicated that they pray. Now, an article published by the Religion News Service on the 10th of May entitled "Texas Legislature Passes Bill Allowing Chaplains in Public Schools" by Jack Jenkins. The Texas legislature has passed a bill that would allow schools to employ chaplains in addition to school counselors, with Republicans overriding objections by Democrats to send the proposal to the governor's desk. The bill will permit school districts to hire chaplains who, unlike school counselors, are not required to be certified by the State Board for Educator Certification. A version of the bill already sailed through the state Senate last month, and the Texas House passed an amended version on May 9 in a vote that appeared to fall largely along party lines, with 89 voting in favor and 58 opposed. Conservative groups such as Texas Values Action have voiced support for the bill, and the National School Chaplain Association, an arm of the Christian group Mission Generation, testified in support during committee meetings last month. Rocky Malloy, head of the NSCA, argued during his testimony that the bill would increase school safety and not infringe on the religious beliefs of students, saying, "Chaplains operate within an individual's belief and convictions. They are not working to convert people to religion." But Malloy's organization has suggested otherwise in the past, and critics of the bill argue it could lead to proselytization and erode the separation of church and state. "I worry that this bill will lead to Christian nationalists infiltrating our public schools and indoctrinating our students," Democratic Representative James Tallarico, a Presbyterian seminarian, told RNS from the House floor on Tuesday. Texas Senate Democrats made similar arguments during debate over the bill last month, and multiple Democratic House members made efforts to amend it with mixed results. Tallarico sought to bar chaplains from proselytizing and require parental consent before meeting with students. And Representative Tony Rose sought to limit the bill to schools in counties with populations of less than 150,000. Separately, Representative Jean Wu attempted to bar the use of public funds and require schools to provide a religious leader of a different faith for students who request them. All of those efforts failed, although lawmakers did amend the bill to prohibit registered sex offenders from serving as chaplains, to institute background checks, and to require those serving and the role to be endorsed by an organization recognized by the United States Department of Defense, the Federal Bureau of Prisons, or the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Imelda Meja, a spokesperson for Texas Freedom Network, which has been critical of the bill, expressed concern about the influence of the NSCA. The website for the group's parent organization, Mission Generation, recently began redirecting to the NSCA's website, but archived versions from last year listed a desire to influence those in education until the saving grace of Jesus becomes well known and students develop a personal relationship with him. In another archived version of the website, Mission Generation boasts it has developed a viable approach of reaching the largest unreached people group inside of the public schools around the world. Where many have declared it impossible to deliver the good news, many attempts to do so have failed, and very few organizations are trying. Mission Generation, with God's help, has made record-breaking progress. Mission Generation appears to have allies in the Texas government. In a video posted to the group's Instagram account in October, Julie Pickren, who sits on the NSCA's board, is seen giving a speech in which she appears to celebrate the idea of chaplains proselytizing to children. There are children who need chaplains. For the pastors in here, you already know. We have a whole generation of children that have never stepped foot one day inside of a church, said Pickren, who went on to be elected to the State Board of Education in November. The NSCA came up during debate over the bill. After Representative Gina Hinojosa pressed the chief sponsor of the bill in the House, Representative Cole Hefner, about his refusal to amend the bill to bar proselytizing, Tallarico noted NSCA's support and asked his Republican colleague if he shared the group's goals. In responses to both lawmakers, Hefner resisted efforts to ban proselytizing, arguing chaplains are already trained to avoid such practices. He also noted that people of any faith can become chaplains and insisted he did not want people forcing their religion on others, including his own children. This is just to help supplement and complement our counselors in doing the job, who are working really hard, Hefner said. However, Meja noted there have been several bills introduced since 2013 that could increase the number of state counselors or offer them additional support. At least three bills related to school counselors are currently languishing in committee. You can see where their desires lay, and I don't think it was giving our students what they needed, she said. Hefner and Mays Middleton, the state senator who authored the original Senate version of the bill, did not respond to requests for comments about the bill or its passage. The bill will require school boards to vote on whether to hire chaplains, but critics argue such votes will only invite the kind of political controversy seen at school board meetings across the country over the past year. Pickren appeared to reference such activism in her October speech while encouraging people to pressure local education officials. We have seen this all over America, that moms and dads showing up to school board meetings are shifting the course of education in America, she said. Go to your school board meetings. Ask your school boards to put chaplains in their schools. Ask them to put a chaplain on every campus. Email your school board members, email your superintendent, email and call your local elected officials. The bill is one of a trio of proposals making their way through the Texas legislature that focus on religion in public schools. Critics have argued that some of the bills, which include requiring schools to hang a version of the Ten Commandments, privilege a specific form of conservative Christianity. I see this as part of a troubling trend across the country of religious nationalists attempting to take over our democracy and attempting to take over my religion, both of which I find deeply offensive to Laura Cosette. Our last article was published by the Religion News Service on May the 4th and is entitled, Their Church is Leaving the UMC Fold. They Found Refuge in a Nearby Lighthouse, by Yonat Shimron and Emily McFarlane Miller. After their congregation took a straw poll that showed the majority of members were in favor of breaking away from the United Methodist Church, Michael and Heather Han had to make a decision. Should they stay with the church until it finds a final vote to disaffiliate? Should they lobby members to remain a part of the denomination, now embroiled in a drawn-out split over human sexuality? Or should they move to another church as soon as possible? In March, the couple chose to cut bait and left for another United Methodist Church about 5 miles north of their home in Oak Ridge, North Carolina, a small bedroom community of Greensboro. Ultimately, where we ended up was there probably isn't an opportunity to sway people from the path they're on, said Michael Han. It's probably time to look for another congregation to connect with. The Hans, Michael is a human resources professional, Heather is a school teacher, believe LGBTQ people deserve all the church rights of straight people. They found a like-minded congregation at Stokesdale United Methodist, a rural church that voted to become a lighthouse congregation 2 months ago. The new designation describes a congregation eager to serve as a refuge for people who want to remain in the denominational field. Across the country, Methodists have begun a process akin to what social scientists describe as sorting, where people seek out like-minded communities with similar political, social, and cultural worldviews, in this case religious. More than 2,400 United Methodist congregations out of a U.S. total of 30,000 have left the denomination since 2019, and many more are expected to before December 31, the last date at which they can leave with their properties after paying apportionments and pension liabilities. Most of the breakaway churches are joining the Global Methodist Church, a new denomination formed last year that is committed to a traditional view of sexuality. It will not ordain or marry LGBTQ people. Now the United Methodist Church is turning its attention to taking care of those who want to remain and rebuilding its ranks. Some 67 churches in the Western North Carolina Conference of the United Methodist Churches have officially become lighthouse congregations. More than 80 lighthouse churches have formed in the eastern part of the state, the North Carolina Conference. In joining the network, they have committed to remaining United Methodist and to affirming LGBTQ people. We cannot work with what is not there, Bishop Thomas Bickerton, president of the denomination's Council of Bishops, said at a meeting in Chicago, where he advised fellow clergy to spend more time on those who are staying. But we can see it as a long-time overdue opportunity to reposition this denomination for its next expression. Lighthouse churches and their counterparts in other parts of the country, with names like Oasis, Bridge, or Beacon churches, allow committed United Methodists to find one another in the midst of the turmoil roiling the nation's second largest Protestant denomination. Other conferences, such as the Northwest Texas Conference, which lost nearly 75% of its congregations last year, are finding virtual solutions. The conference has launched an online church, streaming to more than 100 United Methodists in areas that no longer have United Methodist churches. The hope is that some watching may eventually become new United Methodist churches or satellite campuses of existing churches, said the Reverend Jeff Fisher, who co-pastors the Mission Online Search. Stokesdale United Methodist has not yet accepted the Hans or about 10 other families leaving Oak Ridge United Methodist, where 72% of its members voted recently to break away from the denomination. But Pastor Ed McKinney said he expected the Hands would join soon, along with members of other nearby churches not happy with their church's withdrawal from the denomination. Stokesdale has an electric marquee with the words, "All are welcome," out front. It will soon also have a big lighthouse banner. They're kind of in a trauma phase right now. "What the heck happened to my church?" said McKinney. "We're helping them lick their wounds by offering spiritual and emotional support and space to grieve and worship." The Hands said the decision to leave Oak Ridge United Methodist was difficult. They are leaving behind friends and family, including Michael's parents. But the Hands said they explained their reasoning to their two teenage daughters, both of whom understood and supported them. "The heart of it is the issue of human sexuality," said Michael Hand. "That's an issue my wife wrestled with. Jesus loved and accepted everyone. How can we stand in opposition to our brothers and sisters in Christ?" That issue has also forced Allison and John Brady to find a lighthouse church in Charlotte, after the church they had been attending for 25 years made clear its intention to leave the United Methodist Church. "I have a heart for people who don't fit the norm, for people who are different, for kids who have a hard time fitting in," said Allison Brady of Waxhaw, North Carolina. "If a church discriminates based on sexual orientation, they can discriminate against women or people of color. I don't want to be part of a group that discriminates against any group of people." The Bradys found Light of Christ United Methodist Church in the Ballantyne neighborhood of Charlotte, a congregation of 300 with many LGBTQ members, including one queer minister. "Like all Lighthouse churches, Light of Christ is committed to remaining United Methodist. What we found is a congregation that's warm and welcoming," Michael Hand said. "To a person, they said, 'We're glad to have you here. We want to do everything we can to support you.' There was an openness and a willingness to walk along the journey with us." We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.